Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. You know, this time of year, one's mind always goes in the direction of romance, Cupid. Movies and books tell us what romance looks like when we're 20 or 30. But what does it look like when we're 50 or 60? By then, many of us have been in and out of an unhappy marriage and are now looking for more kindness, more compatibility, someone love, somewhat companionship, but where can one find it when we've been out of the dating scene for 30 years? On today's show, we're going to be talking about dating over 50 with two wonderful guests I'll introduce in just a minute. But first, let's listen to the story of Peggy Stell. She lives in Center City, Philadelphia. She's the chairperson of the Transition Network. That's an organization for professional women over 50. Mike and Scott asked her what the women in her group talk about when it comes to dating.
Oh, where do you find the men? That's always question number one. And it's tough, you know, everybody wants to recommend go online and, you know, the social media. And it's very different than the way most of us grew up, which is you meet people face to face and you either pursue a friendship or you don't. And it's a challenge. It's really finding the right people and where are they?
And what are some other issues beyond finding the right people?
Well, everybody has a history. And some people, for some, it's baggage, that the relationships were not wonderful, that there were things that didn't go well, that there is ongoing difficulty. And so when you meet new people, you have to allow for that, that that's part of our history. We can't suddenly say, well, it's not like when you're 20 years old and you haven't been married before and you haven't had children before.
If you look back to, let's say, when you were in your 20s and you and all your friends were dating, is this just as frustrating and anxiety producing as it was then, or is it different, or what is it?
Maybe more so. Because our peer groups may not, the people we're closest with, may not all be doing the same thing. You know, I came from, I am widowed, so I was in a world of married couples. Well, I still go out with those married couples, but sometimes they're looking for to be with other couples. So it's awkward and out of practice, you know, from the high school to the college and all of that. Everybody's doing it. You're with your peer groups. Everybody's going to the bars together or the parties together or whatever the event is. Now, you're on your own.
So are you dating?
Yes, I am dating, but no one in particular. No one special. I'm meeting people. And I believe it starts with friendship and dialogue and finding people who have similar interests.
Are there issues, and I don't know if women talk about this freely, but are there issues about our own comfort with ourselves and our bodies and all of those things that come into dating later on, more so than they did in younger years dating?
Different. I don't know more so, but different, and there's loads of books written on that. I think there's one that's called Getting Naked Again. And it doesn't matter if you're divorced, if you're single, if you've been married, haven't been married, widowed. There's that awkwardness, and our bodies have changed, and we don't look like we're 20 anymore, and we're really not, and the men aren't either. And there's that's another issue that I didn't mention before. Very often what I find online, men are looking for women who are 20 or 30 years younger than they are. And so for a woman who's 50 or older, it's frustrating. It's frustrating because I'm not looking for a 20 or 30-year-old because there wouldn't be that commonality of interests and lifestyle and all.
That was Peggy Stell talking with Mike and Scott. Peggy is of the Transition Network, and we thank her for sharing her story with us. That's what we're talking about today on Voices in the Family. We're talking about all of the issues, concerns, and yes, delights of dating again after 50. Joining me now are Sandy Sally Landau and Judith Sills. Judith is a clinical psychologist in Philadelphia, and she has written several books, including the book that Peggy Stell just spoke about. Her book is called Getting Naked Again, Dating, Romance, Sex, and Love When You've Been Divorced, Widowed, Dumped, or Distracted. And she joins us here in the studio. Welcome, Judith.
A pleasure to be here.
And Sally Landau is a certified public life coach and a dating and relationship mentor. She's on the phone from L.A. Sally, welcome.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. And we'd like to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. Especially if you're 50 plus and you're dating or you are about to be dating. I'd also like to hear from adult children if your parents are dating and what's that like for you. Again, 888-477-9499. And Judith, it seems that Peggy Stell hit on every issue.
Well, where do I meet someone? What's it like at this age, and how come it's different from when I was 19? And is it different from when I was 19? What do my kids say about it? And when do I take my emotional clothes off and show somebody who I am and that I'm in debt and I have a kid with a struggle and my marriage wasn't so great? And of course, when do I take my actual clothes off is a big issue. You did say something very important, though. You used the word delight. And that is what I want to emphasize, because everybody starts with the negative. The fact of the matter is, romance, dating, this is the juice of life. And it is a fun thing. Anxious, yes. Frustrating, yes. But also delicious and positive. And that's an important thing to keep in mind. Or why do it?
So let's get to this issue of dating at 20 and dating at 50. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was 20, I had all sorts of anxiety about whether I was good-looking enough or whether I had the right clothes or whether I was cool enough. And after my marriage ended, I began dating again in my late 40s and early 50s, and I had exactly the same anxiety, but, it was a way different body, and I wasn't so cool.
Isn't that a remarkable thing? That at 25, when your body's incredible, you're shy about it and awkward about it. It's the youth wasted on the young.
Isn't that horrible?
Oh, it's the human condition. So at 60, of course you're worried, and it takes a while to come to the attitude, as long as I'm wearing a smile, I'm good to go. You got to work your way in that positive, confident direction. When you first go back out there, you don't start there, but you can get there.
Sally, let's talk about life coaching around relationships. Who comes to you and why?
Well, primarily, I have women coming to me who are over 40. I like to say these are women who hate to date and want to mate. I also work with men and of varying ages as well. It seems to me this age group is being shoot upon by a lot of their family. They say, you should be out there, you should have a marriage, you should be this, you should. They come to me, and often, really, they don't even want it. They love their single life. They're very happy where they are, and they almost need, it seems to me, they need an expert to tell them, it's okay, be well, have a nice time. But the other group that wants a relationship are petrified, mostly that they're going to be alone for the rest of their lives. They see lots of other people having fun, and they're not. And so they don't even know where to go, and that old phrase, all the good ones are taken, seems to be prevalent in their heads.
I want to talk about the phenomenon. It's going to be an ugly word I'm going to use. The phenomenon of desperation. It's an emotion most of us are afraid of, and yet we're social animals, and we do long for intimacy. Being alone doesn't feel good, and being older and alone can raise a lot of anxiety and insecurity. Will we ever have what we think we need. Therefore, desperation.
Well, it's desperation in whose eyes? If I have a need to connect, and I have a need to connect emotionally, romantically, in a friendship way, for companionship, and I go out and try to gratify that need, am I desperate? And if I acknowledge that need to my smug married friends and they label me as desperate, am I? Or am I brave enough to say part of human is connection, and I am not making that connection on my couch dressed in my sweatsuit with the cats on it? I'm not making any connection there. So I think sometimes what can be labeled desperation is actually honesty and courage.
Well,
I was going to say, I agree with you, and I also think that desperation, when it's taken to an nth degree, does have an odor about it. I see clients who are so desperate, I'm just going to use the word again, to have that connection, that they do everything socially that's awkward. They're not sitting back and seeing, well, do I even have anything in common with this person? What might I want to share with them? This moment in time could be a great fun. It just could be something in the moment. We bring to these engagements lots of expectation. And I like to say there's a distinction between standards, which we should hold on to, and expectations. If it were only possible if we could leave our expectations at home. Of course, we do expect that the light will turn green. You know, if we've been waiting at the intersection, we expect the dentist is waiting for us. But in these relationships, these new dates or social gatherings where we might meet someone of our interest, if we expect them to be so many things, it's going to be impossible for them to satisfy us.
I'm not so sure. You know, the more I look at this expectation phenomenon, the more I get it confused with fear. You know, expectations are in the head. I think fear is what's in the heart. Judith?
Well, let's talk about this as a process. I think you can start that process of going back. You know, you were in a harbor. The harbor was probably a relationship, happy or unhappy, whether you lost through divorce or widowhood or you got dumped. And you are now thrown out to sea. When you're thrown out to sea in the beginning, you're anxious, you expect, and you go right back to being 19 years old and saying, this person needs to be the right age, I'm looking for red flags, I need to judge where this relationship's going on date two, and I'm saying things like, do you own or do you rent? You know, crazy kinds of things. But over time, if you keep doing it with practice, you can relax into being the mature man or woman of 58. Where you know yourself, where you begin to think, maybe this doesn't have to be the relationship my mother wanted for me.
Right, right. You can be free of that. Let's go to the phones. We've got lots of people who want to join the conversation. We've got Jay on the line. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Great. Hi, Dr. Sills.
Hi, Jay.
How you doing? Remember me, Jay Picorni?
As a matter of fact, I do, Jay. Nice to speak with you.
Nice speaking with you again. I haven't thought of you in years. This is funny.
Well, I hope things are going well for you romantically.
Yeah, do you have a question?
I got divorced 12 years ago, been a single parent since then. My two daughters, I took them over, and I am dating. Been on the internet, and I'm 67. And the only place for a guy like me to meet age-appropriate women that you can, I bought a pair of sunglasses, and my daughter said, Dad, they're so cool. I said, yeah, Steve McQueen used to wear the same glasses. And she looked at me and said, who the hell is Steve McQueen?
Steve McQueen, right.
So that's why age-appropriate women are so important for me. I don't want anything to do with inappropriate age-wise.
I'm just curious about something, Jay. Have you dated age, what you might call inappropriate women who were significantly younger than you?
A 45-year-old woman, and it went for a while, and everything, real nice girl and everything, but just you miss things like Steve McQueen, on and on and on and on and on, the 60s. I mean, they don't know. They don't know. They have no clue.
Right.
And it just, what do you talk about? And all my older buddies, oh, Corny, who's talking? Well, wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all real cute, and they think that's fun.
I do want to discuss the issue you first brought up, and I'm going to turn to my guest. We'll start with Judith. I want to hear Sally weigh in on it. Also, about the internet as a dating scene. Thanks for your call, Jay.
Online dating has its largest growing segment, people over 50. This is the way one meets. It is a positive way one meets. It has lots of risk and heartbreak. Not so much the risk of the serial killer, et cetera, because people know the ground rules, meet in a public place and don't give your name. But you can get very emotionally attached. Nevertheless, the fact of the matter is, it is a different world, and people who are single find the largest pool of single people online. If you're not going to do it, you're going to have a tough time meeting someone.
Hmm. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Diane on the line.
Hi, Dr. Dan.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm in my late 50s and on and off single most of my life. Just 5 years ago, left a 17-year live-in relationship, and I did the internet thing. I tried it for a couple years, and I just found that men in my age group or older were looking either for the younger woman or were looking to have sexual relations right away, and I have higher standards than that, so I find that that's a dilemma for me.
Yeah, I'm curious. Sally, you want to weigh in on that?
Sure. It depends, perhaps, where you're looking for these people. And I love the internet. I'm thrilled to be alive in this era where we can offer it to people because it's a great icebreaker. You know, sometimes it's just hard to say hi or to break into a conversation, and you have this profile to talk from. But if you are concerned that you're not meeting the right people, let's talk about it in two ways. If you're online, you're maybe not presenting a profile that's correct, that doesn't really describe who you are, or you're not asking them the right questions about their profile. And there is a little technique about reading between the lines, so you know what questions to ask them on those first exchanged emails.
So what? Wait a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's the technique?
Well,
Do we have to make an appointment with you? Because I'll have all my listeners schlepping out to L.A.
Oh, thank God for Skype and telephone. I think that we need to know what our... I mentioned this before. We need to know what our standards are, and hopefully they're just 3, 4, or 5 things. But for me, for example, I don't want someone who smokes. So when I was dating, I would ask questions, even if they said I'm not a smoker. I said, have you ever been, and how recently? For example, they might have said, well, yeah, I quit a year ago. Well, that for me wouldn't work. So we have to be willing to ask the questions up front and not get to those dates that we're not going to like. You know, but I should just sort of insert this so we don't get past this point. I don't know if all of my dating relationship coach friends agree with me, but I believe first dates are too long. I think they should be 20 or 30 minutes. You're going to be able to tell in that period of time if it's somebody you want to spend more time with. Getting a dinner date, oh my God, that could be expensive and could take 2 or 3 hours. And if you're with someone you don't like, no wonder people say dating has a bad reputation.
Hmm.
You say, I'd love to meet you. What a great opportunity. It'd be a lot of fun. Let's just have a coffee date. Let's see if we get along. And then let's say 20 minutes in, you are both having a blast. Well, you know, you're adults. You can extend it. You can make any plan you want. But at least you've given yourself an escape clause.
It's an interesting idea. We've got to take a short break. We've got lots of other callers who want to join the conversation and lots of other issues, including getting naked again. So we're talking about dating over 50, all of the issues involved, the good news and the bad news. Give us a call. Our number is 888-477-9499. We're talking with Sally Landau and Judith Sills. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll be back after a short break. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
Has your teenager changed friends, and are you feeling uncomfortable about them? Is your teenager skipping school or losing interest in their usual activities, and are you concerned with how they are spending their time? The Family Training Program may be able to help. If eligible, you will be invited to attend individual sessions with a family specialist to help you make positive changes in your life and help improve your relationship with your teen. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2 or www.iamconcerned.org. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
Hi, I'm Dave Davies. You've made the choice to listen to WHYY, and we're committed to making it the best experience possible. Your support allows WHYY the time to tell the full story, so you hear reliable, in-depth news coverage. This is only possible with your support. We're trying to wrap up our winter membership campaign, but we need to hear from you now to reach our goal. Please visit WHYY.org or call 1-888-345-9499 to show your support.
Holding your woman's leg, I see it. No, the other one. That leg. My love has come along. Oh, yeah, babe.
Bittersweet listening to that. That was Etta James, who just recently passed away, and she was a wonderful, wonderful music maker. We're talking about dating over 50. We're with Sally Landau, who's on the phone from L.A. She's a life coach. Judith Sills, here in the studio, is a psychologist and has written Getting Naked Again with a long and interesting subtitle that we will pick apart. Judith, we had a caller on our last segment who had a bilateral mastectomy, and she's got body image questions. And so the question is, when to start dating and when to tell her secret? And, you know, that was an issue for me when I was on the dating scene. And looking online, when do I say I'm a quadriplegic? You know, when does that happen and how?
Well, really, let's take it big picture. Big picture, when and how do I reveal the parts of me that I know will be jarring to you? So first of all, of course, I do it in person. And second, I do it in person. I'm not doing that online. We are meeting now as two humans face to face. So when we meet as two humans face to face, that person discovers you're a quadriplegic, but not the bilateral mastectomy. When do I speak about that? When I am about to be intimate with you, I'm going to tell you I have some body issues and hear how you feel about it. And I'm not going to tell you my body insecurities, like what droops, but something dramatic like a mastectomy, I'm going to say, and I want to tell you something. I have had patients and girlfriends with mastectomies and new lovers. So I want to reassure you, if you're listening, whatever is going on with your body, what matters is your spirit, your confidence, and the twinkle in your eye, and your willingness to take a risk. Doesn't mean you won't get your heart broken, because you will, but you'll bounce back. And that endpoint and the joy in the process is what we're going for, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sally, when young people date, they're not necessarily looking for a certain kind of person. At least when I was dating, they were looking for love, and then they'd get to know the person after that. Many dating sites talk about criteria and checklists as though finding a partner is similar to finding a job. Does it have to be that way?
Well, I don't think anything has to be that way, but it is kind of when you're older looking for a job. I know many of my clients, and even myself, I took it very, very seriously, like it was one. I suppose the older we get, the shorter period of time we have to look ahead in our lives, and we might as well make our efforts count. I was going to say something that you were just talking about, though, if I could go back to it. When we're young and we're dating, you suggested that we're looking for love. But lots of times when we're young, we have this sort of unconscious gene pool selection going on,
mm-hmm.
because this mate may be producing children for us.
Right.
And one of the advantages, I would say, for people over 50 is that thing is not considered. They don't care. They're looking at much more, I would say, valuable things that relate to the relationship they're hoping to create.
It's not about how short they are. It's not about the color of their eyes. It's not about the posture of their shoulders.
Those issues are less as we age. But I do want to come back to the issue, and I'm going to turn to you, Judith. This issue of dating being kind of like finding a job. You wrote an article in U.S. News where you laid out tips for people, and here's a quote, to help you ace that first date. Does any date have to be aced?
Oh, Lord, you've thrown something back at me that I said.
Yeah, damn no. Right, woman.
Acing, a date has to be aced, and I'll tell you how acing it is. You are acing it when you are in the present, in the moment, without your tip list, your checklist, or your interview for red flags, and your heart is open and interested in who this person is. That, to me, is an ace. The list of what you want and what's on your list and what your values are and what you're looking for and the job market is not an ace. Nice. I respectfully submit.
Nice recovery.
Thank you.
Very lovely.
And from the heart, because it's a process. To go from that list of I need 25 things to how can I experience the person across from me?
We've got a caller who might be addressing this. We've got Roger on the line. Let's have him weigh in on it. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Doctor. Always good to listen to your perspective.
Well, thank you.
My feeling about this is that it is goal-oriented at this age, and it shouldn't be. It never was when it worked out. It should just be get to know and play and enjoy the times that you have together when you do date and go from there. The checklist, it is kind of like the job interview you're talking about. So that's basically my point.
Well, wait a minute, Roger. Do you have one in your head? Do you have a sense of the kind of woman you're interested in or the kind of relationship you're interested in?
No, I think it really is, it's more, you know, it's just like how it worked out before. It was through a series of times together that things develop. It's never, I mean, it's absurd for you to actually look at a profile and try to match with a profile. It's, you know, that's things that are said about the person, not necessarily how you're going to react when you smack your thumb or, you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying very well. One other question before my guests react. Are you having fun out there, Roger?
I am actually dating a very beautiful woman right now, and it's come out of play together. You know, like when I say play, it's just like when you're kids, you go to the playground and you hang out, and that's how you determine who are going to be your friends, and eventually through your social circle, whether it's school or your neighborhood or your church, that's also how you sort of develop. Mm. And I just remember looking at internet dating before and feeling that it was sort of, you know, you got to hit your checklist, you got to find only this sort of person, and that sort of led me to, you know, pose this question to you.
Well, Roger, in the words of my original relationship mentor, Mazel tov on what's happening, and I know Judith.
No, thank
is,
you.
Take care, Judith.
What a great phrase that was. It's how you made your friends. You played with them, and you found out who you like to play with. A profile on the internet is like the college essay. Depends who wrote it. If you have a great writer, you have a great profile, and it's a marketing piece. And once you've marketed yourself, you're in the presence of the person. I often. Half of my practice is male, half female, and I have to work with both groups to stop interviewing, to stop churning out these job interviews where someone actually will say to you at dinner, so, where do you see yourself in 5 years? This is not how we talk to our friends, but you can loosen up over time. You can actually say to someone, so what was your day like today? Just to connect in the moment. It's a technique, but it's effective.
Yeah, I like to say to people, it's good to approach everybody with a curious mind and an open heart.
Yes.
And that's, it just makes everything so much easier. That was That was Judith Sills. She's a clinical psychologist here in Philly. We're also on the phone with Sally Landau, and we're talking about dating over 50. Hey, listen, we've got a clip for you that depicts the awkwardness of a first kiss. It's from the 2003 film Something's Gotta Give with Jack Nicholson and Diane Keaton. Let's listen.
Oh, sorry.
For what?
I just kissed you and I...
No, honey. I kissed you.
I know that one was me.
Try not to keep score.
That was Something's Gotta Give from the 2003 film with Diane Keaton and Jack Nicholson. I think I want to see that film again. So, Sally, how do we judge this? A, when we are ready to go on the date, and when it's time to kiss, to touch. You know, I know a woman who's in her 50s who is out in the dating market, and she said, you know, when I asked her what she wanted, she said, I am horny. That's what I want, but I don't know if that makes me a slut. I'm scared to say it. I don't know who I'll attract. So how sexual are we over 50?
Well, I think a lot of times people are not tuned into their sexuality, so they don't have a clue. A lot of people who are tuned in know right away this person is attractive to them, that there is some chemistry going on. I think it's perfectly fine. I mean, we are adults. We can do whatever we want. And sometimes those dates don't end up in relationships. Maybe what we want is just friends with benefits. And that's okay, too. I mean, it's just recognizing who you are. You're over 21. You can make your own decisions.
we are adults, aren't we?
We are adults, yeah. Well, remember that.
Well, let's go back to the phones. We've got Michael on the line. Michael?
Yes, hello. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Yes. My situation is, it's kind of... A lot of people stereotype this. I'm 58 years old, and for 2 years I've been dating a woman who's significantly younger. She's 26. I happen to be a widower, no children, and so therefore having been able to find someone in my age range has been difficult due to, you know, prior marriages and children and grandchildren. I'm not used to that. And from her perspective, she's... you know, indicated to me over and over that men in her age range are either looking to settle down and have children, or perhaps they just don't appreciate her and treat her a certain way. So we actually have agreement on the important things that are important to us, you know, having each other's space, on our activities. And the difference in generations, actually, it's a complementary situation where... I learn about hers, and she learns about mine.
Huh. Interesting. What does she want in a relationship?
I'm sorry, I'm having difficulty hearing you. I'm sorry.
What does she want in a relationship, Michael?
Well, she's very happy with what we have right now. We enjoy our company. Going out to dinner, it's very relaxed. It's very natural. She states she feels like she's with somebody who's in their mid-30s. Because I guess I act younger. I don't act my age. I don't look my age. And at least according to her, I guess myself a little bit. And I've made it clear that, you know, things for her could change due to that age gap. And if she comes to a point where she feels she needs to settle down and have children, which that wouldn't really be feasible, I don't think, for me, and that wouldn't be fair. You know, I mean, part of love is making that statement. And not being selfish and saying, if that's what you feel at some point, then I support you in in that.
So I've got an awkward question here. Why did you call in?
Well, I wanted to share this because I think there's a, as was stated at the outset of the show, there's some kind, I think it's a stereotype that mm-hmm. is out there that men of a certain age range over 50 are looking for a younger woman primarily as a trophy wife, but yet that's not what I'm looking for. I mean, to me, it's about the relationship and getting along, and so therefore there can be age differences, just as there can be differences. People don't understand why someone from a particular ethnic background might be together with someone from a different one, and a lot of people look at that and say, gee, I don't understand that. And well, so I think it's important that people understand there can be more to the story and just don't make that blanket statement.
Well, Michael, it sounds like you and your girlfriend are in this relationship with your eyes wide open, and I hope that your comments have opened others' eyes who are listening. So I thank you for your call, and I wish you great happiness.
Thank you.
We are going to have to take a very short break. We're talking about dating over 50 with Sally Landau and Judith Sills. Sally is a certified life coach out in L.A. Judith is a psychologist here in Philadelphia, and she's written several books, including Getting Naked Again. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. If you're over 50 and dating or considering it, give us a call. Or if your parents or one of your parents are dating, give us a call. 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Independence Blue Cross supports WHYY. IBC is proud to launch the new Independence Blue Cross Foundation, whose mission is to transform healthcare in the communities they serve. The foundation's Blue Safety Net program provides $2 million in grants to local nonprofit health clinics that offer quality health care for the uninsured in our communities. The foundation supports more than 30 clinics that care for more than 145,000 individuals in underserved areas. To learn more, visit ibxfoundation.org.
When did slavery end? Most people assume it ended with the Civil War, but a new documentary vividly describes how black Southerners were trapped in a brutal system of forced labor well past the Emancipation Proclamation.
People were worked to the very limits of human endurance.
The producers of Slavery by Another Name are with us next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
And most of us at a certain age know that's Fleetwood Mac, unless we are of that age where we couldn't remember the name, which is what just happened to me. So thank you, Jennifer, for the reminder. We're talking about dating over 50 with Sally Landau and Judith Sills. Our lines are filled, and Judith mentioned during the break, and I want to hear your reaction to this, Sally, that almost all of our callers have been men. And when men come to you, Sally, what do they want versus what women want? What are the issues?
They're very task-oriented. They want to know, they explain what they've done, where they've been unsuccessful. They want to know exactly what to do, step one, two, three, four. And if I'm not careful, they'll do it. I want them to be imaginative and creative along the way and use some guidelines, but they still have to be authentically themselves or the women are not going to be attracted to them. Women are much more, at least in my experience, much more philosophical. They want to look at situations from many different sides and decide what works with each and individual man. But men are very linear in their approach.
Yeah, no real surprise there. Mm-hmm. You have a similar take on this, Judith?
I have a similar take, and I would add two things. One is the men I work with tend to be much more passionate about a lost love. Their hearts, mm-hmm. they get caught in a lost love, can't move on, return to that hurt, don't like the breakup, and really suffer. I mean, we're generalizing gender-wise, but I've seen that more with men. And I also have seen a tremendous amount of frustration because men are not, they like to think of themselves as good guys, and they are often not honest. And they have a tremendous difficulty putting these two together, tremendous difficulty. And they will say, how dare she think that I was having an affair with Gloria? How dare she? I've never touched Gloria. And if I say, yeah, but you're having an affair with Barbara, maybe she just got the names wrong. They're outraged because they, in general, want to see themselves as full of integrity, and yet right. there's all that conflict.
Right. My father, I tell this story, when he was in his mid-80s, he was dating three women at the same time. And he said, my memory's too bad to start telling lies. So all three of them knew he was dating, and he couldn't remember their names. He called them by different food groups. So one was sweetie pie, and one was lamb chop, and the other was honey something. He was creative, and you know, my father, like his son, might have had a little testosterone poisoning. But we've got a caller on the line here who is 85 years old, and she said she is active but can't find men who will keep up with her. That's a problem. So what is...
I think we're talking date younger here. I think if you're 85 and you're filled with zip, you have reached the zone which we call ageless. I think ageless starts somewhere around 50. And if you're in the ageless zone and you have the twinkle in your eye, look around, because if your heart's open and you're active, there's someone there. Personally, I plan to be taken out of the home while sitting on someone's lap. I believe you can keep this going forever if you're filled with fun.
You might be taken out of the home because you couldn't get off that person.
That's a true. Carried out.
That's a whole other issue. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Rose on the line. Hi, Rose. Do we have you? I guess we don't. Let's go to Cecilia. Sorry about that.
Yes.
Hi, Cecilia.
Hi, Dan.
Hi.
Hello?
Yeah, what can we do for you?
Hi, Dan. And thank you all for this program. I just wanted to say that I'm a 51-year-old veterinarian. I bring that up just because I can approach everything scientifically. Been wedded for 8 years, married to my college sweetheart. And I think now I'm ready to date. I took time to heal, threw myself into my career. And I wanted to be very pragmatic about everything. And there are STDs out there that were not around, certainly when I was a young girl. It wasn't even herpes, had not been. And so I wanted to be very careful as I'm trying to enter this arena. And I just wanted to share and see if anybody else had this problem. I went to my doctor, my primary care, to say, you know, I'm thinking of dating again. I, you know, offered blind dates and I know condoms, et cetera. But I heard there's an HPV vaccine. I would like that vaccine. And he laughed at me.
Why?
And I was shocked. And I said, he said, well, that's approved for young women, you know, who hasn't been sexually active. And I said, you know, I was with one man my entire life. He was with one woman. We had stability in our marriage. We lost our virginity to each other. Basically, I'm starting over again. And I would like this. He goes, well, insurance won't pay for it. I don't care. I'll pay for it. It took so long showing up at a hospital, and I'm in medicine, not human, animal medicine. But it was very interesting. I finally did get three series of a shot and not paid by insurance, but that's okay. I just wanted to know if I just wanted to bring that up because sometimes I don't think people in the medical profession are taking it seriously that we are worried about STDs.
And STDs are rising rapidly in the population over 50.
I have heard, and I'm greatly concerned.
Yeah.
And I just feel it's not being talked about enough. And when I bring up the subject with my friends, male or female, they look at me like I have two heads, because I think they weren't used to speaking about it like some generations now are. And I go, guys, gals, you got to be aware of it.
Well, let me address this from a psychological point of view, and I wonder if some of this denial on the part of the general public is because we don't want to acknowledge that older people are sexual or having sex, or older people meaning our parents.
Well, certainly my parents are not having sex and never did, as far as I'm concerned.
Only once.
But in fact, you point to a couple of very important things. It's, of course, the issue of old people's sex makes younger people cringe. That's why we keep it a secret from them.
Right.
We don't tell them, but we are sexually active, and we are enjoying ourselves, and we are in denial about STDs for one big reason, which is condoms are a drag. And we like to tell our children they should use them all the time and practice safe sex all the time, and we are not practicing it ourselves. And that's a problem. We talk a very good game, but very, very few people who are sexually active actually wait and get tested. In fact, I am reliably told that about the third date is when people become sexually engaged, on an average. And that's true if you're 25 or 65. And that is way too soon to know whether someone is physically well or not. We're taking risks.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, please, Sally.
There's something so really yummy about having this conversation prior to sex and saying, I'll get tested if you'll get tested. And then we'll have an event. I'll show you mine if you show me yours. And you have this waiting period. I don't know if it's 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, whatever, until the test results come back. And you decide that you're safe if you want to avoid using protection. Of course, then you have to have some faith, you have to have some trust that this person is not going to be playing around. And that just happens in any relationship, in any decade of our lives. But I think having getting tested, talking to doctors freely, I don't know enough about the difference, supposedly, I guess, in the medical profession about having the HPV virus at 25 or 65, but if I had a doctor laugh at me, that would be my signal to change a doctor.
Yeah, time for a new doctor. I want to talk about technique here with those of us who are over 50, because techniques do change and we are less limber. My father had his prostate removed and he was impotent. And, you know, he said to me, well, I can't have sex anymore. And I said to him, you are telling your quadriplegic son that you can't have sex anymore. And we sat down and talked about the birds and the bees, and I told him all sorts of ways that he could have sex and enjoy it. But, you know, not all people of a certain age, you know, can get that instruction from their quadriplegic son.
Say that as a bonus.
So where, how do we learn that? How do we figure it out?
Well, let me just reverse that for a minute and say this is one of the great advantages of dating and romance when you're older, which is that sex is better for two reasons. One is men are better lovers because they are less orgasm-driven, more relaxed, and have more of a view that sex is a large umbrella of physical and sensual contact. It's not all goal-oriented. And they're much more interested in the responses of their female partners. There's more ego invested. How's she feeling? What's this like for her? As opposed to a young guy who's 25 who thinks he should be thinking that, but he's not. She's more confident about her body and more comfortable saying what feels good. So you have two people who are able to experience and test and explore and discover what you were kind enough to tell your dad.
That was a big generalization about their being more comfortable with their bodies, number one. And number two, being able to talk about it. That's a stretch.
It's a stretch, but it's the direction we go in. We go from 20, I couldn't say, to 40, maybe I could mention, to 60, I'm laying it on the line, if you push yourself a little bit.
And that is what we have to do. We have to push ourselves
a little bit.
So
we need to take advantage of the moment. Sometimes we might want to say a little slower, somewhat to the left, but then people don't want to be too instructional in the moment of sex. So later, having breakfast or walking to a movie, you can say, you know, when you did this and that, that was really good. And next time I'd like to try blah, blah, blah. There are all kinds of ways to communicate. And if we don't, we're doing a disservice to our partners as well as ourselves, because I think basically if we're in a loving relationship, we each want to please the other.
Yeah, it really is about generosity. And that's what, as we mature, that's what sex hopefully is more about. It's about generosity and pleasing others. And the question I'd like to see us approach our partner with is, how can I bring you the most pleasure? What is it that you like? And you know, that's what Judith talked about with mature approaches to sex. It's a curious mind, a curious mind and an open heart. Well, listen, we are out of time, unfortunately. I'm sorry to all the callers who are on the line who tried to get in and we couldn't get to you. My guests have been Sally Landau and Judith Sill. Sally's a certified life coach out in L.A. Sally, thank you.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Judith Sills is a psychologist here in Center City, and she's written several books, including Getting Naked Again, Dating, Romance, Sex, and Love When You've Been Divorced, Widowed, Dumped, or Distracted. Judith, thank you. It was great meeting you.
A pleasure. Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Thank you. Lots of fun. Next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to re-air our conversation about caring for and saying goodbye to our aged parents. Well, you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com, and you can reach us at whyy.org/voices, where you can download the show. The engineer today has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez-Loon is our executive producer of audio content. Emily Haas is our volunteer. Mark Sinero is our intern. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Jennifer Lynn is our producer, and I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.